This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Now let's talk about something we could all use something more of right now. Sex. Great sex. Put it like this, we're all on lockdown right now. Because of that, it really cuts into our time of what we like to do. We can't go to parties, can't go to the cinema, can't go to concerts. We actually just can't do nothing. So what else is there better to do? You stay at home and you do what it is that you always want to do. Sex. And what better way to do that than by taking Blue Chew and really, really going for it. It's not like you gotta get up in the morning to go into the office. Well guys, you can now increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed there, man. Listen up. Go to BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. Well, Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. You can take them anytime, day or night, even if you've got a full stomach, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Blue Chew is made in the USA. It's prescribed online by licensed physicians, so you don't have to go to the doctor or wait in line. It's even cheaper than a pharmacy, and they prepare and ship it right to you in a discreet package. No awkwardness. You don't need to leave the house. If you personally can benefit more from confidence where it counts, Blue Chew is the fast and easy way to enhance your performance and penis. Well, right now we've got a special deal for It's Hughie Hello listeners, and only It's Hughie Hello. It'll never work on any other show apart from the H-Man's. Visit BlueChew.com. Get your first shipment free. That means for nothing. When you use the promo code HELLO, as in It's Hughie Hello, all you have to do is pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Use the promo code HELLO to get it for free. Why not? It's free. You might as well try it. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. And remember, when you support our sponsors, you in turn help make this podcast possible. So please be sure to use our promo code HELLO at BlueChew.com. Thank you, Blue Chew, and on with the show. Want to buy wrestling merch but don't want to buy the cheesy or childish stuff the WWE puts out? Well, Collar and Elbow is the company for you. Collar and Elbow was founded on the traditional values of professional wrestling. Two entities working together to create a product intended to connect with people on an emotional level. A symbiotic relationship where one cannot flourish without the other. They strive to create a product that embodies their passion for professional wrestling through street fashion. Basically, it's wrestling merchandise that you can wear in public that doesn't make you look like a total nerdy mark. This is great stuff. I've bought a bunch of it myself. I wear it myself quite often. And when you go to buy it, don't forget to use the coupon code Hughie. That's H-U-G-H-E-Z-Y, all in capital letters, to let them know that you heard about it through me. That's Collar and Elbow. Use the coupon code Hughie. And do not forget to tell your friends, because this is the best merchandise company you're going to find anywhere. It's Hughie Hello, and there's a little break to the usual format of the interviews. We're going for one of the all-powerful music debates, and of course, we're going very, very obscure this time with a little-known band called AC/DC. That's one of my hilarious jokes that people laugh at so much. The joke being that AC/DC actually are the biggest band on the planet, and I'm acting as if nobody has ever heard of them. That's hilarious, I'm hilarious, and hopefully the comedy maintains at such a high level onwards. But before we get to that, it is time for the plugs. Do not forget to go check out Hugey Entertainment for the video version of tonight's podcast and of all previous guests. I will go through the names, but I'm actually not going to. That's up to you. Just check the iTunes page, the Spreaker page, or just go to fucking Hugey Entertainment for a nosy because you want to see what's there. Speaking of YouTube, if you happen to be a fan of professional wrestling, but you want to hear it spoken about by the experts, then go check out Keeping It 100 Official on YouTube. That's the official YouTube channel for the controversial podcast hosted by Disco Inferno and the legendary best friend of mine, Conan. If you're on social media and you want to follow me or interact with me, then find me at @TheHugey on Twitter and at @TheHugey on Instagram. Like, retweet, post all my shit, do whatever it is I need to get bigger so that I can talk to people that I think that are better than you are. And I have to say that as this is a musical episode, any and all clips you may hear, well, if you want to buy them and you want to support those artists, then you can get them from all good official music stores and streaming sites. And as my personal review, as I'm sure you would think, I think that they're all 5-star brilliant, and I wouldn't use them if I didn't think they're anything less than 5 stars. So thank you, and the plugs are over. Okay, so as we've said, this is an AC/DC special with the great John Paz, the workaholic from the two-man empire. If you don't know who AC/DC are, I'm really shocked that you'd be listening to this. Doesn't make any sense, nor does it make any sense that I'm still talking about this. I should have, you know, deleted, thought of something else as the intro, but whatever. But it's a little taster for newcomers. If you don't know what AC/DC sound like, well, why don't you shove this one up your jumper? We'll be right back. favorite tune that was, and why did I select that song? Well, because that song does not appear in the top five debate with the great John Paz, which we are about to get to right now. AC/DC are the greatest band of all time. I think if you want to really enjoy this one, maybe crack open a beer, maybe have a smoke, and just imagine that you're at an arena, at a stadium, getting ready to watch possibly the greatest hard rock band in the world. But enough about that. It's time for the debate from the great John Paz. Hello. As a long-time old-school pro wrestling fan, the one thing that is ruined with wrestling, in my opinion, is the fans. It went from being a great party to being a ridiculous fan fest of people who take it way, way too seriously. And what better to fucking way to get a party started is than AC/DC. And speaking of pro wrestling, the guest today, the non-stop workaholic, we're going to do a debate, the great John Pozorowski. John, how are you doing today?
Doing very good. Thank you for having me on. I just have a question for you about the show.
Oh, yes.
So very Seinfeld-esque of me, I'm thinking in my head, is it It's Husey Hello or It's Husey Hello? You know what I mean? Which, how does it go, you know?
It kind of depends on the mood of the show. You know, it's actually kind of, I wouldn't say funny or interesting story or even a good story at all. But I got it. It's Husey Hello from, I used to steal clips from podcasts and I'd put them on YouTube back during the very lucrative monetization days. Yep. But to fuck other people over from stealing from me, even though I'd already stolen the clip, I would put It's Husey Hello at certain points during it. So if anybody copied the audio, it's ruining it for them so they can't build an audience while I don't give a fuck because I don't listen to that shit.
Yep.
There you go.
Wow, good backstory. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't like that. I only tell it to black people, so, you know. the question I've got for you before we get started, and this is a groundbreaking question. Nobody's ever thought of this kind of question before. This is probably going to get this episode 7 million downloads within the first 20 minutes of release. So, John, how long have you been a fan of AC/DC?
Ooh, man. Been a fan probably since, I'd say, the early 90s. So probably going on about 30 years for sure, just as far as like a hardcore fan. A buddy of mine was a big fan, but really his older brother got us into it. And, you know, he would drive us around and stuff, and he'd always have it on or always play it. And you knew, like, the big songs. You knew, like, the important songs and, you know, the big hits, if you really, you know, Shook Me All Night Long, stuff like that. But, man, he would put on all the Razor's Edge and all the albums you maybe didn't really hear or didn't get critical acclaim or aren't on the radio. So probably since about 90 or so. So probably like 30 years, maybe a little bit more of listening to them for sure.
Yeah, I was a casual fan ever since I was a kid. But then, and it's actually fairly recently, well, when I say that, it's not what I'm about to say, what I'm going to say. It was announced that the soundtrack to Iron Man 2 was also going to be the greatest hits of AC/DC. Mm-hmm. And I'm a Marvel, I'm gayer than Freddie Mercury for dick than I am for Marvel. I can't get enough of it. I'll go on and on about it. But yeah, so when they said, oh yeah, it's AC/DC's going to be the soundtrack, I thought a new album or a compilation. And so I thought, that's cool as fuck. I remember the album cover came out. It was Iron Man and War Machine under the AC/DC logo, and the whole thing was shiny. And I was like, this is fucking incredible. So the album came out about 2 months before the film. So it's coming up on 11 years because it came out 2010. And 2 month anniversary is what I meant. In 2 months' time, it will be the 11-year anniversary. That's right. What I'm trying to say. And I listen to that album every fucking day. And it's because of AC/DC that I was able to get in shape. Because I, at the time, was just pushing 260.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. I loved a lot of sandwiches and a lot of sitting down. So I got the album, and I noticed that I was listening to AC/DC a lot. Because it was listening to this stuff, downloading all the classic albums, and I said, right, new rule. I can only listen to AC/DC while I'm working out or if I've worked out. So thanks to AC/DC, I dropped a shit ton of weight and went completely deaf really quickly.
Hey, you know who else works out and listens to AC/DC? Vince McMahon. So in good company. Yeah.
Well, me and him have a lot in common. We both enjoy working out. We both like AC/DC. We both have sex with Sable. And, you know, on and on and on.
Yep. Yeah, it's a pretty good company to be in.
Yeah, and just before we get into the AC/DC section, John, of course, has about, I think, 79 podcasts. One of your more recent ones, which blew my mind, was that you got to interview Xavier Woods from New Day or whatever his real name is. The thing, like, tell me how the fuck that happened.
I probably message everybody, or I somehow have a connection. It's weird. Like, somehow you went from, like, no Rolodex. This is, like, 6 years ago when I started. No Rolodex, and just, like, grew the Rolodex into this big thing. So it's like, all right, this person get me in here. This person get me in here. This person. So basically messaged somebody else to message him, and he said it was okay to message him. So I messaged him, and we were just kind of talking, and he's like, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, I just want to do an interview. He's like, well, I don't want it to be just WWE-centric. I'm going for this G4 thing, so I want to talk video games. I was like, sure, let's just lead with that. If we talk wrestling, we'll roll into wrestling too. So he literally had said before we started there was no, like, time constraints. So I was able to go probably like an hour and 20, something like that, a little bit longer than normal WWE interviews typically go. But he just said he was okay to do it. We're going to talk G4. We'll talk wrestling, whatever you know, wanted to do, and really just went from there. But it's one of those things where it's like, I literally try everybody. If I can message this person and get to that person, or just even message them, get a no or get ignored, whatever, I'll move on to the next person. But I just messaged someone, that person messaged him. He said it was okay for me just to reach out to him. And I did, and just kind of hit the ball rolling from right there.
And just as you mentioned video games and wrestling, one of the times I interviewed my nemesis at Disco Inferno, you probably don't know him, but he's a small little guy. I could kick his head in, and I will whenever I see him. I'm going to Richard Ramirez his face. We had this conversation where I said that I think that the video games had more of an effect on the Monday Night Wars than the actual TV shows, because those games were so fucking good. Like, bloody children today, they won't understand that we were there for the technology change, where it used to just be two flat characters punching and kicking to, wait a minute, 3D fucking models that can climb up the ropes, and there's cage matches, ladder matches, all this shit. Like, we were there for the change, and I think that those games bumped up the viewing figures, because it's not like one game you'd be playing Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat, but this other game, like a SmackDown or a WCW, it's like, wait a minute, these guys are real and they have a TV show, so I can actually watch The Rock versus Triple H for real. It's like, yeah, it's on fucking Thursday night. It's like, holy shit, I've got to tune in. So what's your take on that very short question?
I don't know. I used to love the video games. I probably haven't played video games in 20 years, so I have no idea if WWE is still good at video games or not. But I remember, like, the No Mercy game, the WCW versus the World. There's a bunch of games. Nitro, they even had a game. I mean, there was a bunch of games I liked that were pretty good. But I know for us, we would play the games, and we were more obsessed with, like, the backyard wrestling. So who would be Hall or Nash or Hogan? Like, we would be obsessive over who gets to be what guy, and kind of then we would create our own characters, and we would, like, basically copy off of those guys and do our own thing. So I don't know, I guess you both kind of have a point, but I don't know, I might have to go with Disco here. I think I wanted to be the guys more than play the video games. We want to, like, act it out and pretend we were the guys.
Yeah, but those games, like, even today, if I had a computer, there was what I still love doing with, like, SmackDown 1, which I think was just called SmackDown, is it being some friends would get really high and play four-way ladder matches, and you'd have the multiplayer, and they would go on for like 50 minutes. And in a way, some manly burping there. In a way, I think that gaming logic is what went into the ring as years later, because now it's like, no sell, do a crazy fucking move, no sell it, do another crazy fucking move, and it's all just like I get that it's work, but the fakeness of it has become so obvious that they might as well fucking wrestle ice cream.
Yeah, that part is definitely true. They've turned it into a complete video game. Bing, bang, boom, no sell, flip, up. They kill the person just like a video game. You kill the person, they should be laid out. No psychology. Obviously, you just get right back up. Or, you know, I've seen some of the guys literally just like, whatever, not to say ricochet, but ricochet off the rope, do some weird flip, fall on their head, get back up 2 seconds later, no sell it. Like, it is like a video game. They definitely stole a lot of the moves for video games. I know that.
Yeah, I remember this is one of the things that stuck out to me the most. This was in the TNA days when Russo was there. And there was a completely random four-way ladder match that happened on an episode of the TNA show. And it was like 6 minutes long. and it had no, like, the winner got nothing. It was just a four-way ladder match. And I just remember thinking, that's from a video game. Because that could happen in the game. And I just think that, but the other thing is, I think that it's all about the gifts, and I think that there's too much nerd culture brought into wrestling, so it's become very uncool. And like I said in the intro, now that there's fans coming back for WrestleMania, what I think WWE and these companies need to do is advertise it as a fun night out, not like, come see the world champion in his fucking seventh match against whoever the fuck he's feuding with. It's got to be like, hey guys, have you been stuck in the house for too long? And you haven't been going out with your friends? Well, why don't you come to WWE and cheer the hero and boo the bad guy, have a drink, take photos, take videos, see the women, see the crazy stunts. This is fun, instead of like, it's real.
Yeah, it's honestly, the nerd culture is definitely killing it, and like them like either wanting to whack off to it or cry to it just pisses me off. And I think Disco, I don't know if it was on Conan's show or if it was with Russo, was literally like reading what I just read. Some idiot fan were like, oh, they had this great callback to something that happened a year ago and blah, blah, blah. I was like, they did not do a callback. That was the guy's finishing move, and it just happened to happen that way. You know what I mean? Like the stuff that they just make up in their head, like, oh, that was happened because this happened. Like, no, that they don't really think that far back usually nowadays. It's just like they try to turn it into their own little creative like storyline and try to like make it emotional and try to say like, oh, this was so great, I could whack off to it. Like, it just, I don't know, it's just the nerds, they killed wrestling to me anyway. It's like, man, like it just becomes so like almost uncool, when back in the 90s obviously and even the 80s it was so cool to be a fan and to like wrestling.
Yeah, like that's what I always say to people, because there's people today go, oh, wrestling stinks, and I'm like, back in the day, The Rock was basically the modern version of Muhammad Ali, and I know how dramatic that sounds, but I'm talking about the, with just immediate charisma. I mean, The Rock only wrestled for 4 years. I did that for 4 years. Like, end of 96, 97, 98, 99, 2000, then he went part-time and he was done. Like, his career was so fucking short.
Yeah, it is crazy to think that you, like, when we're a fan, we think like his career lasted forever. It is short. Even Austin's run on top, I mean, he wrestled for long, but even Austin's run on top was very short, but it felt so long because it was so good. And I just remember even being in school at that point, everyone was obsessed with wrestling. They would always talk about it. It wasn't like, oh, you know, wrestling, blah, blah. You know, we had the wrestling shirts on and stuff. It was so cool. It was like, oh my God, did you see what Austin did last night? He destroyed Vince's Corvette, or, you know, whatever it was. Oh, did you see The Rock's promo last night? That's hilarious. He's calling that guy a hermaphrodite and calling him Hermie and like all this other stuff. So, man, it was so much different, so much cooler. The guys were just so much better. They had such charisma, larger than life. I mean, you just literally wanted to be those guys, and they were so damn cool.
Yeah, but speaking of so damn cool, the main reason why John Paws is here, because I said pause, bringing the laughter. We're here to debate the legendary AC/DC and do a top five episode. So how easy or how difficult was it for you to create your list?
Literally, it was impossible, because it's funny, because in my head, whenever I'm playing songs on my my iPad. I always try to put on like my favorite songs of AC/DC first, and like, you know, just like kind of fool around as I'm driving, because sometimes I take long trips. I'm like, oh, I'm going to put it in some sort of order or trying to make it a little bit of a list, and it always changes. So it was crazy. And I purposely kept out all the top popular songs that people would know, even though I love those songs. Like For Those About to Rock is one of my favorite songs, but I wouldn't put it on there because it's almost too popular. You know what I mean? Maybe that's bad thinking on my part, but sometimes I don't want to go too popular and hit you with the hits. So it was pretty hard to figure out, but I went with a lot of my rare favorite songs that I just absolutely love, that maybe people might not even know, but they're awesome, and I think are the top AC/DC songs.
And that's kind of the fun about it, because there's a lot of people out there who love AC/DC but don't know album tracks, because sadly AC/DC's become one of those bands that, as much as I love them, they're going to play the same songs at every gig no matter what. Like, if you're expecting obscure AC/DC, you're going to be sadly disappointed. But then, as soon as I get to see them live again, I don't give a fuck. They can play whatever they want, as long as I'm off my face. No time like the present to begin. So, John, what have you got in there at number five as the greatest AC/DC song of all time?
So I went off of the Razor's Edge album. I love Razor's Edge, but I didn't put that one. Got You by the Balls. I just love that song. I love just like, I don't know, I love the intro of it. I love how it kind of, you know, slowly hits you, like, hey, Mr. Businessman. Like, it's very kind of slow, but then, boom, it nails you. So I just love AC/DC. And so many people say, oh, all their songs sound alike. I disagree. You have to have good ears. You got to be listening. They do not all sound alike, and this one definitely sounds different than a lot of the rest.
What was your take on the Razor's Edge album?
I feel like it is so underrated. I just love so many songs. And even for Christmas, my wife hates it, but I always play Mistress for Christmas. You know, you have to play it on Christmas. That and the Hanukkah song by Adam Sandler is just two musts on Christmas. But I feel like it's underrated. Razor's Edge itself is an awesome song. And that damn song on SmackDown that... that now that, you know, now everyone knows and that they play all the time. But it's just like one of those things. It's like, man, I love that album, but nobody talks about it. It came out in 1990. So it's like, I feel like it should be a little bit more popular, but nobody ever mentions that album for whatever reason. I love that album.
And weirdly, Razor's Edge is the most important album in AC/DC's career, because they had a pretty rough 80s, which is so weird considering Back in Black started it. But Razor's Edge came out and was huge. And it enabled them to then become the type of band that they are now, where they put out one new album every 5 to 7 years, do stadium tours, and they continue to go. But I like Razor's Edge. I love the title track. And this song, while I don't know it very, very well, it's good.
It's definitely an underrated one, because Fire Your Guns is on that album, is awesome. Money Talks is on that album, which is awesome. Obviously, Are You Ready? But everyone knows Are You Ready because of SmackDown. Honestly, in my head, I was thinking Vince McMahon definitely was like listening to it, working out, and he's like, "That's the new Fox song. There we go!" Like getting all pumped up.
AC/DC just recently renewed. Excuse me, I'm not going to edit that out. I'm going to wangle in this podcast. AC/DC just released a new album, which was amazingly good. And speaking of that album, the first song I'm putting on my top five list opens that album. I'm going with Realize.
Ooh, I was just going to say, it might be my favorite song on that album. Nice.
Yeah, I fucking... Black Ice, I liked. Rocker Bust, I liked. But they weren't exactly groundbreaking. It just seemed like this is the new batch of songs to put out so they could do another stadium tour. And the fact is that when they did the Black Ice tour and the Rocker Bus tour, they barely played any of the new stuff. So as much as I did, well, I didn't hate any of the new albums. It's like, they're not exactly must-haves. But this album came out Power Up, and it's one of my favorite AC/DC albums. Like, it's so fucking good, and the songs are so much energy. And this song in particular is fucking... I remember hearing it for the first time and just being like, this is one of the best songs they've ever done on the first listen. What's your take on Realize?
Man, I love that song. I love the whole album, but I do love that song. I love it when an album, especially AC/DC, that hits you with a really good one to start it, because it kind of gets you going. Like even Black Ice, Rock and Roll Train, I love that song. So like once they hit you with a good song to start it, it's great. Realize is awesome. I feel like Power Up maybe should get a little bit more recognition for a great album. I didn't hear too much high praise for it, but it should have gotten more. Great song, great choice. I didn't think you'd go so new though.
Oh no, this album, I got it on Christmas Day, and I must have played it 3-4 times back to back. It's just because I'm so I listen to a lot of music, but I really, really don't like much modern stuff. So when you can at least get an old school act that still does relevant shit, that like it's really when they're back on tour, and hopefully it's early next year. I can see this opening the show, mm-hmm. and I can see me shitting, coming, and pissing at the same time.
Did you ever see the stadium tour of Black Ice? Did you ever go?
I didn't see that one, though.
Best intro ever. I've been to some really good concerts. So they put up on the video screen, it's Angus, as the devil, and these two, it's a cartoon, but in this huge screen, like best drawing you've ever seen, and these two women with huge boobs are following him throughout the train, and they're trying to crash the train. So they're driving the train, they're going through, and he's trying to like save the train, and all of a sudden, boom, on the screen, it completely blows up. Smoke, fireworks, everything goes off, and an actual physical train comes through the screen, blows up, and an actual train turns from cartoon to real. I was like, holy shit, how the fuck did they do that? Holy shit. And then, boom, they come out. They go, rock and roll train. I was like, you don't even see them come out. They just appear. You're like, holy shit. Like, that was the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. Holy shit. Their production value is the best. Them and Kiss is the best.
Yeah, but that's the thing about AC/DC is that I think a lot of people out there don't understand that they are the biggest band in the world. Like, they're bigger than the Rolling Stones or U2. Like, it's just that they seem to vanish for so long that people forget.
Yeah.
But then when they do stuff like Black Ice, where people are like, they just crashed the fucking train to open the show.
It was awesome. Yeah.
Speaking of awesome, what did we get in there at number 4?
This is a very, very rare one. And the lyrics to the song, possibly the greatest lyrics to any song of all time, from Ballbreaker, The Honey Roll.
What's your take on the Ballbreaker album?
Honestly, and I was literally, I think it was last week, my buddy who actually got me, him and his brother who got me really into AC/DC, was just talking to him, and I said, what's the best album? And he said, well, it's Back in Black, but I know you're going to say it's something else because you don't want to sound like generic. So I said, all right, Back in Black for sure. Like, you can't argue that. But my favorite album is probably Ballbreaker. I don't know why. I just love it so much. Hail Caesar is awesome. Obviously, The Honey Roll is awesome. Burning Alive, which is another song I debated putting on here, I absolutely love. For some reason, that album, and I don't know what it is, something hits with me. There's a little bit of like twang to it. There's a little bit of almost like they do a little bit of country, and like Burning Alive, you almost hear like a little bit of a twang. So just something about that album just hit me, and I just love it. It's probably either first or second favorite AC/DC album.
Yeah, there's a version of the title track, Ballbreaker. A live version.
Of course, Ballbreaker, yep.
Yeah, there's a live version of it on, what's it called, Backtracks or something like that?
Mm-hmm, yep.
And it's so unbelievably good. And you just want to go to Angus and go, hey, Dwarf, why isn't this fucking song on every gig since? You haven't played it in almost 20 or 30 years, you fucking ugly bastard.
And it's funny, too, because that song you would think would be, title track, everything, should be kind of elevated. I love that song too. It's so good. That Backtrack thing is awesome.
Yeah, but I have to say though, as an album, Ballbreaker wasn't for me. Like Hard as a Rock and Cover You in Oil, the singles were just sort of like, it's like they're trying so hard to be like dirty old man. If you think, mm-hmm.
Well, Honey Roll is literally dirty old man. Like the. It, literally, he goes, bend over, I'm going to put my 5 inch, I'm going to put you, 5 inches. I was like, oh my God, like very, very crude stuff. But even Hard as a Rock, I like Covering You in Oil. But on the CD, if you like, we're going to name all the songs, I'd probably put those two in the bottom part of the album. I love the Fuhrer. That song is awesome, which has that like little twang to it too. So I don't know, something about that album always struck me. Maybe it could be the time period that I started listening to it in the mid to late 90s. But it's just, I love that album.
Well, in at number four, I'm going for a song that's not on any AC/DC album. I'm going with Big Gun.
Whoa, you're going to steal my thunder coming up. Damn. Last Action Hero, yeah.
Which, A, by the way, very underrated film. Anybody who doesn't like Last Action Hero, I hope you die.
I will make one point about Last Action Hero, though. Daniel Madigan, that little shit, he's annoying, and the old man is annoying, but that Arnold is so good, and the villain is so good. Love that movie. I think I have it somewhere. I don't know. And I have Backtrack somewhere back there, but yeah, love that movie.
Yeah, and the woman playing Arnold's daughter, bang! Of course, Sonya Blade.
I believe, if I remember correctly, isn't there an awesome Megadeth and Anthrax song on that album too, if I remember correctly?
There is, but I fucking hate Megadeth.
Oh.
The one of the very rare bands where I don't like one song by them. Yeah. I just don't get it.
Symphony of Destruction, no, doesn't do it for you?
None of it, and I've heard so much of this stuff. But yeah, regarding Big Gun, this is one of these songs that it was a huge hit for them, and they've also never played it live.
Which is so weird, because that song is so damn good, and I don't know, you never really know why certain songs don't get played live. Like, I was listening to Metallica, there's some song, fuck, I forget the name of it. One of their newer songs that's really good. Lars said he won't play it live because it's too hard for him to play. It's like, okay, that'll make sense. But Big Gun, why can't you play that live? That song is so damn good.
Yeah, it's so strange for me. And also, this was probably the only time, as silly as this may sound, that AC/DC went like commercial for the first time. It's like, hey, let's do a song for a new Arnold Schwarzenegger film. It's like that's very unlike them. If AC/DC weren't going to do a new song for fucking Iron Man, then they're definitely not going to do one, well, for anyone else. But yeah, Big Gun, I love it. I hope the fuck that it's on the next tour. I just want to hear it live for the first time. But more interesting than that, what did you get in there at number three?
Stole my thunder, literally. The Big Gun from Last Action Hero soundtrack. Damn it, you stole my thunder. I love that song. I don't know why. It's one of those things. It was shocking that they did that for that album. But to me, it was just like, holy shit, this song fits the movie, obviously. But it's just such a good song. I'm surprised it wasn't used either on another album. I'm surprised they never played live. It's weird. It's like, do they not know that's an awesome song? Or did somebody have to clue them in that it's such a great song?
Yeah, and plus, if anyone doesn't know the song and fancies a laugh, go check out the music video where you get to see, quite awkwardly, Arnold Schwarzenegger goose-stepping dressed up as Angus Young.
Yeah. Good call, yeah. Yep.
In at number three, I'm going with Touch Too Much, which is something that I'm going to do to Sasha Banks as soon as I meet her, and she'll love it, because look at me. Looking at this list, I have to say that for me, because I get into AC/DC relatively casually, then a big fan much, much later, for me, Brian Johnson is my AC/DC singer, not Bon Scott or not fucking Axl Rose anyway. So I'm not so much into Bon Scott as much as I am Brian Johnson's versions of the Bon Scott era, you know, from the live albums and stuff. But Touch Too Much is my number three. What is your opinion on that?
I absolutely love that song. I used to be obsessed with it. I remember I put it on when we finally were able to create CDs. You know, when you're driving your car around and, you know, in like 1999, when I first got a license, like you put on the CD. I remember Touch Too Much. It's one of the first songs I got, stole it from Napster and put it on one of my CDs. I don't know, for some reason, I love that song because it has like that weird kind of slowness to it, but then it picks back up. You go, Touch Too Much. It's like one of those songs where it's not typical AC/DC hard, 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 hard. It goes a little soft. It's got a little bit of a different flavor to it. I love it. But I love Bon Scott, but Brian Johnson's my guy too. It is what it is. They were both great, but Brian Johnson's a god. He was just so damn good. I think, and people can laugh or say it's not true, I just think he's the best lead singer ever. I just love his voice. I love how he carries himself. I love just the way he walks around stage, the way he plays. You know what I mean? I love everything about it. I think Brian Johnson's awesome.
Have you seen any of Brian Johnson's talk show?
No, but I did hear a while ago, this is years ago, when he was talking about how he was deaf and they kicked him out of the band because he was deaf. They literally just took all of his shit and were like, all right, you're gone. But obviously, you know, they made up since then. But it was one of those things that's like, wow, this guy is like a god, a legend. And they're like going to kick him to the curb because he can't hear, because of really because of their fault. So it's like weird.
Yeah, no, there's a great, it shows you how talented Brian Johnson is, because there's an episode where he's interviewing Joe Walsh from the Eagles. And on the spot, they're just fucking around and they write a song right then and there. And it's actually really good, even though they're just fucking, it's like, how'd you do that? Like, you were just talking about fucking CDs. Next thing you know, you've written a great song in the back of a car. By the way, that's the Style Council's definitive collection. Oh, yes. But another thing about Touch Too Much, this is another one of these classic songs. They don't play it live and haven't played it live in decades.
Yeah, nope.
Infuriating. Nope. Speaking of infuriating, and I don't know why I said that, what have ye got in there at number two?
So this is technically on Backtracks, and I don't know if it's anywhere else except for Bonfire. So this is an old one, very rare. I don't even know if it's on even an album or anything. Backseat Confidential. It's such... I love that damn song. Just, it's so different for them. And like the riff or whatever you call it, the beat, I'm not really too musically inclined, but whatever you call it, their riff, I guess that's technically the technical term, is so much different for that song than so many other songs that you've heard from them. It's like, wow, is that really them? Like when you think about it, because it doesn't really kind of sound like them, but man, that song is so good. And obviously if you listen to the lyrics too, it get a little raunchy as well, but I just think, like, man, that song is just, like, out of nowhere, such a random but awesome song that I love. I always have that on my, especially, like, for long trips and got to stay awake or you're going to maybe fall asleep. I always love to keep that song because it's, like, a different beat to it. And it really gets you, yeah, gets you pumped up.
Yeah, because that's one of the things about Bon Scott that I do like, is that you know he was living the life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So when you hear him singing about, fuck, Rosie's big fat arse or whatever, you know that he actually was doing that, and you know that this Backseat Confidential really was about him with another man.
Have you ever seen the Whole Lot of Rosie in concert?
Yes, and it's fucking incredible.
Isn't that insane? If you think about it, like, the person who's creating that, right? They're like, okay, we need a 100-foot tall, 50-foot wide, fat woman with her boobs hanging out. Okay, got it. Like, blow it up. Got it. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, holy shit. Like, just the creativeness of them is just unbelievable.
Would you like a spoiler for the Power Up Tour?
Yes, yes.
I have a family member who's a concert promoter, and she gets all this insight about what's in the works and backstage demands and all this thing. She had told me that obviously AC/DC were supposed to be on tour last summer, or not last. Yeah, I think that the album was supposed to come out earlier last year. For some reason, it didn't. And they were supposed to be on tour right now. She told me that they were going to play this giant stadium show here, and that was what was planned for the tour was a hologram, Rosie.
Oh, okay.
And I think that would be amazing, because they could make it, because it's any size they want, like 100-foot tall fucking Rosie. Well, Brian Johnson's going,
his voice is the best. See, their production value at like concerts and stuff, besides Kiss, I've never seen anybody even come close to as good as their production value. From the train going through, from Hell's Bells, where the actual bell comes down, to the little walkway for Angus to go play and then, you know, get lifted up and all this other stuff. And then he comes back, and then they have the actual physical cannons and guns for those about to rock. I mean, their production value is just insane, especially live. So it's like you're going to hear a great show, but you're going to see a great show too.
You're going to remember going deaf.
Yep. Yes.
But speaking of production value, we've mentioned this song a few times. In at number two, I'm going with Rock and Roll Train.
Yes.
I think that the problem this song has in quotations is that it's a modern song. So nobody's ever going to say, oh, that's one of the fucking best ever. I think that it's got more melody than the AC/DC songs used to. And the other thing that I love about it is I thought that a stiff upper lip was quite average. I wasn't really high on Ball Breaker. So for me, this had been a long time since there'd been a new AC/DC song where I was like, fuck yes, let's go. And then Rock and Roll Train comes out and it's like, wow. And it's the one that really, as silly as it sounds, it's the one that really converted me 100% into AC/DC fandom. What's your take on Rock and Roll Train?
And especially after seeing it in a concert. I think I went 3 times that year, and I'm pissed because my brother saw them 4 times 1 year. Couldn't go to MSG. That motherfucker. MSG, I think the ticket was like $200 a head or something, and I was doing something else, but damn it, I'm still pissed that I couldn't go to that one. But he basically went 4 times a year, and it was literally the same exact thing. The train. I was like, damn it, I want to see it again and again and again. So good. Love that song, and I love that album. Triple H almost ruined the War Machine song that's on that album for me by using it. I don't know if you remember, I think it was WrestleMania 25. They brought back that song and used it as like a tribute video for him. I was like, holy shit, get that visual out of my head. This guy is going to ruin this song for me. Thank God years later I'm over it. But that song is awesome. That album is awesome. I love it. And Stiff Upper Lip, just to bring that up, I like that album. Great song, Safe in New York City. I don't know if you remember.
Yes. That one's good, but I don't know. The one thing I do love about AC/DC is that no matter how big they get, like, their music videos don't improve. Like, Rock and Roll Train's music video has less production value than this Zoom call here.
Like, it's funny, they put so much money and effort into the physical, like, when you see them live, the physical show, they put no effort into their music videos. They could fucking care less.
Yeah.
About music videos, yeah.
Like, there's a music video for a song called Play Ball.
Yes.
From the Rock or Bust album. And I've seen fucking more impressive Snapchat filters.
You know, it's funny, TBS did a bit better video than they've done. Did you ever see that leading into the playoffs? They literally took Play Ball, and there was, you know, it's like Ron Darling, like, let's play ball, and they'll play that, yeah. But they'll show baseball clips. Like, wow, okay, they made a better video than this. And years ago, during the Subway Series, when the Yankees played the Mets, they had a Safe in New York City video. Fox, like, before the game came on, they played Safe in New York City, and they did a really good video. You know, Clemens drilling Piazza. They did all this cool stuff with that song. I was like, how come AC/DC can't, like, do something creative with the songs? These baseball people can edit these awesome videos together.
And just one final note on the Rock and Roll Train. On their most recent live album, which of course came out about fucking 75 years ago, Rock and Roll Train's the opening song, and that crowd, I think it's in Argentina or Italy, I don't know what's the difference, that crowd is insane. And at the end of the performance, Brian Johnson basically says hello in their language, and he goes, excuse me, we don't speak Spanish very well, but we speak rock and roll pretty good. Let's go! And the fucking stadium just goes, yes! And even when you listen, I always listen to that when I go running, and you think, come on, you fucking bastards! White power! That's... Oh, well, maybe not that part, but the other part, you think, let's get fucking pumped!
That's literally what AC/DC does. Like, it gets you ready for your workout or whatever. Sometimes it's bad because you're listening to it and you know you might get some road rage or something because you get so damn excited. Like, yeah, fuck yeah, man, this guy is awesome, hell yeah. Like, you literally, like, live through the guy. He's so, I don't know, he's so, like, uplifting. It's almost like, yeah, fuck yeah. He may be like 5'6", but fuck yeah, he's a monster. He's the top of the world. Yeah, let's go, man. I don't know, he's awesome. I love him. So good. Such a good front man.
Well, speaking of front, we're now at the front of your list. And John Paz, what would you say is the number one AC/DC song of all time?
This is almost like a little bit of a shocker, probably even for me a little bit, but it's my favorite song and maybe not be the best. I guarantee you hardly anybody's heard of it. From Flick of the Switch, which is not a very well talked about album. I love Flick of the Switch. Nervous Shakedown. Love that song.
Wow.
So I'm going huge shocker. I didn't do Dirty Deeds, which which I absolutely love. Me and my buddy used to, when we used to prank and break mailboxes and throw eggs at people's houses, we used to blast Dirty Deeds to get us ready and go destroy, you know, people's property and stuff, like they did in the movie Dirty Work. I don't know if you've seen that with Norm MacDonald and Artie Lang. So very, very much like that.
Hey, Dirty Deeds. Hey, I want it on the soundtrack there.
Did you know, and this was confirmed by Artie Lang, that those Al McPherson rumors were true?
Really?
Yeah, Norm MacDonald dated Al McPherson in the later 90s while she was making the Batman film, Batman and Robin. She was seeing Norm MacDonald, and it's like, so she's just trying to act like, oh, George Clooney, George Clooney, but in real life, she's like, hey, you like this, you like that, huh? And he broke up with her. Can you just imagine that? This Norm MacDonald would be like, hey, I deserve more, you know? Like this guy, he's probably going to cut me out of gold.
Yeah. You realize that Norm to OJ is you to John Wangland? Do you realize that? That's like the same thing? Your jokes is like Norm with OJ jokes?
OJ was a nice guy. Flick of the Switch, it's not for me, and the album cover, I still can't believe that was allowed.
It's very lazy, yeah.
Yeah, like, it's fucking horrible, and even if when you see stuff on vinyl, and you look at, like, Razor's Edge, or Back in Black, or Highway to Hell, you look at the covers, and you go, fuck yes. Like, even Stiff Upper Lip, which isn't one of my favorites, the album cover, you go, holy shit. But Flicking the Switch looks like some kid fucking drew on your album cover.
That's what I was thinking it was. Maybe one of their kids drew it or something.
Shite. In at number one, the moment you can't wait for, it's one of the more obvious ones, but it's got to be Whole Lotta Rosie.
Great song.
I don't know. This is one of the very rare songs that's completely unplayoutable. I have heard this. How many times has played in my thing? 371 times.
Holy moly.
Yeah, and I'm going to play it again and again. It's just, especially the live versions, when it goes, no, wait a minute. It goes, you just think, fuck yes. And I remember going to see them at Aviva Stadium in Dublin, and there was about eight of us. And let's just say I was drinking, and I was fucking out of it. And just the idea, it's like I'm watching AC/DC playing one of my favorite songs ever, and it's kicking fucking arse. It's the classic lineup. Well, not really, but Brian Johnson, and he's just doing his wee dance, and Angus is fucking wiling away, whatever the fuck, the rocking away. I don't know. I'm fucking out of it. It just blew my mind.
I love at the live version too, they'll do that sequence a little bit longer. Yeah. You know what I mean? Then the real, because they can't like get you into it, because you're like, oh, like you like kind of like building you up for it. Like they'll go back and forth a little bit, and then they'll play it. So I was like, oh, that's awesome. They like literally make the song like 30 seconds, 45 seconds longer because they're going back and forth. But that part's awesome because it kind of gets you really into it. Like, and they're like, you're like getting excited, and then they nail it, and then that fucking big blow up doll comes up. That's awesome.
Do you listen to the live versions more than the studio versions?
No, it's probably not the same, but I try to listen to both. I love the live versions too, because I don't know, I love the like, you know, like the crowd reaction stuff, like River Plate, that album or whatever, that CD, whatever you want to call it, where it was that huge, that gigantic show that they had. I love kind of going back and listening to that. But like literally their live version, that, you know, the double disco that they had from the 90s, that's basically a greatest hits album. It's awesome. I used to listen to that, and I still do, over and over and over. They're one of the very few bands that sound just the same, or if not better, live than in the studio. Most bands that I've listened to aren't that good live. And are better in the studio. They're weird. They're almost reverse or equal, because they're just so damn good. It's like, wow, man, they really must be that talented. They're not being manipulated in the studio at all.
Do you think the Power Up may be the final album?
I heard that it was, but I'm hoping that it's not true because, like they said, like Brian Johnson was gone and like they weren't going to do another album. And now he's back and has another album. So I'm hoping that they do one. It seems like you're right. Like every couple of years, they, for whatever reason, just another one pops up, you know, like Black Ice and Rock or Bust and Power. So it seems like hopefully it won't be the last. I'm praying it won't be the last. Because I can't really get into new music, but if they have new music, I'm immediately downloading it on my phone. So I hope it's not over for them.
Yeah, because one of the other tour spoilers that I was told was that as the tour was meant to start last year, it was going to be it was going to be a new tour with the new album plus the Back in Black anniversary.
Oh,
and
okay.
The plan was or is to play Black and Back in full, some of the new highlights, and then the classics like Thunderstruck and The Highway to Hell and fucking Let There Be Rock and stuff, which to me, that's the perfect way to go out if this is the final tour, like the greatest rock and hard rock ever.
That would be awesome. I love Back in Black, too. I mean, that's probably my favorite album. If you go I would go Ballbreaker if it was, like, maybe a little bit more unknown, like, favorite album. But, man, that album is so damn good. It's so awesome. But it would be kind of the perfect way. I guess it would really be the 41st anniversary of Back in Black, right? Yeah. Technically, I guess last year was supposed to be the 40th anniversary, and that got all screwed up due to the COVID and the pandemic. But, yeah, that would be awesome. I would love that. I love that whole album.
Yeah, sadly, it's likely going to be the 42nd anniversary before we get to see
it. Yeah, it seems like it. Yeah, because I was just talking to somebody yesterday about this. I have Rage Against the Machine tickets for August of 2021. That now that's in jeopardy? Like, what the hell? I thought we were going to be in the clear. Now that's even, I'm worried about it. So that means AC/DC is going to be a year older. And, you know, maybe they're looking towards retirement, which would suck.
It does suck. But what doesn't suck is the Back in Black album, which just looking at the list, none of us picked one song from Back in Black.
Which is insane, because I would probably say it's the best album.
it's absolutely ridiculous.
I didn't want to go too generic, though, because obviously Back in Black is awesome. You know what I mean? That might be too obvious. What Do You Do for Money, Honey is awesome as hell. Obviously, a lot of people don't know that, but that's kind of underrated. Sin City is awesome. So that album, there's a bunch of good stuff on there that I love. But yeah, I'm surprised we didn't go a little generic and pick one of them.
Well, I'm sure if we do this again, we'll generic the tits clean off it. Is there anything you'd like to plug for these pathetic losers, especially Mike Durband, who will be listening to this, shaking his head the whole time?
What is his problem? Why is he doing
it? Scum.
He did make a good point, and I was laughing about this because I'm trying to catch up on Get My Go. Mike Durband made a great point, and I said this to Joe Feeney, and Feeney said, I know, it's like so obvious. How could you have a watch-along and the watch-along be shorter than the show you're watching?
Yeah.
How is that possible?
Because he doesn't even know what a watch-along is. Like, he doesn't understand. This is what... I'll be here all day. I hate him.
And I said this to Vinny. I would love to interview this guy. I just have so many questions for him. But Joe... Oh, no, you don't want to do that. Oh, no. Joe is against it. Rad Rob is all for it. He said, yeah, I would like you to interview him. I don't know. I don't know what your take on it, but Joe Feeney was 100% against it.
I would say do it, but you're going to learn nothing from him. He's going to lie to you. He's going to spin. He's not even going to admit to being called John Wangland. He's like, no, man, no, that's just a rumor. They made it up about me. Yeah, they're all bullies and liars. Here's the other thing I have to laugh at. This guy actually was in the military. He was at war in fucking Iran or Iraq. I can't remember. Like, he's seen some shit. Yet the thing that's stressing him out is us making fun of his wrestling reviews. People actually blew up. People tried to blow him up and kill him. But what the thing that's driving him nuts is the fact that we don't like his fucking AEW talk. It's unbelievable.
Hey, and I messaged Feeney this before, and you could tell Feeney this. I was listening to Get My Go 34. John Wangland put me over, right? Mm. Guess who never puts me over? Joe Feeney. So, hey, just think about that. Think about that. Yep. Put that in the back of your mind. Yep.
Yeah, that scumbag Feeney. Yep. But what plugs have you got?
Oh, I'm sorry. We were totally going off track here. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out my website, tmptempire.com. I got so many shows. Check me out also on the Russo brand as well. I got my new John Paz Versus series. which my interview series, which, by the way, I got to tell you, you have to come on that very, very soon.
Absolutely.
What else do I got? PJ, Just Incredible, Pro Wrestling 101, Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan, University of Dutch with Dutch Mantel, Dr. Tom, Taking You to School. Then I got my own two-man power trip interviews that I do each and every week. Coming up is Ted Arcidi. The next week, I believe, will be Dr. D. David Schultz again, which is awesome. So I got a bunch of cool stuff coming up there. Also, Talking Tough with Rick Bassman is out there as well. So I got a lot of stuff. And Business of the Business with Lavi Margolin. So I got a lot of stuff coming up. I got some more ideas coming down the pike as well. So hopefully everybody can tune into that. Two-man power trip, Russo brand, and all that happy, fun stuff.
And just to tie into the intro, once the PlayStation 5s and stuff are actually released, maybe we can all have a old school video game tournament show.
I used to love No Mercy. I don't know if you remember that game from Nintendo 64.
Mm.
The Royal Rumble was the best. You never knew who was coming in. They'd zoom in real close, and the guy would be running out to the ring. Oh,
that was the...
And WCW versus the World.
Yeah, and Revenge.
Mm. Revenge actually might be better, but yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. But listen, John, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Hopefully when all this shit's over, we'll all be at AC/DC shows enjoying going deaf together. It's going to be great. And stay safe, take care, and finally, clean your arse. He's shaking his head, no, he's refusing to clean his arse.
Okay, thank you, John. And do not forget to check me out on his podcast, which will be coming very, very soon. And I think the video version will be on Vince Russo's YouTube, unless I'm wrong, which I usually am, because there's something wrong with me. This will be the last podcast of January. We will be back in February, funnily enough, because that's the month that follows February, with two more interviews at least. There may be another music debate, we'll see. Maybe there won't be, but I will be back in February. Already I'm trying to book out March and April, and if that's not good enough for you, tough. You've already listened to the podcast. I don't give a shit. So thank you for listening, and it's Shuzy. Bye bye.